How did you realize that this was the most important part for success? What do you say to people who they're like, I am who I am?
What's the best practice for shifting identity?
Best advice you ever got?
It takes a little more to be a champion.
Welcome to Sauna Sessions.
Thank you, man.
It's good to have you here. Yeah, we've been knowing each other for a few years. Yeah. I've admired your work. Man, you got a long list of just achievements. Ex-NFL player. You grew up in foster care. You created a successful business. You're an entrepreneur. You're a father, husband, and an amazing human being. Ninja warrior. Like, you're just an incredible person. And so my first question, I always like to ask people, what are you excited about these days?
It's a good question. I get that often lately. Mm. It's funny you're asking that question. Genuinely, I'm excited to watch my kids do stuff and my wife and everybody be happy. Mm. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, so a couple of days ago, I was at my house and it was a weekend and my buddies asked me to go over and hang out. Mm. And it was like a late night thing. There's a fight coming on. And I love these guys. Good guys. We live around the corner. And so I'm going to go out there and you'll hang out. And I'm sitting there and it's like, it doesn't start till like 7 o'clock. And I'm like, I'm with my family. My wife's there. My son's oldest is back from college. And I'm like, I don't want to leave. Mm. Like, not that I don't want to go hang with them, but like, I love being home. Like, wow. As much as I love going out and doing the things, there's nothing like having peace at home. So like, what I'm most excited about is watching my son go up to college, hopefully pop a time. Mm. I'm coaching my son's youth football season before he actually heads to high school. So I'm excited to see him do well. Mm. My wife does her master's track, my daughter's her track. So it's like, that's really it. It's not the business accolades, man. Yeah. I call it season of dad right now. So that's what I'm in. And I'm super excited for it.
That's incredible. Yeah, I feel like that's wisdom. That's growth. That's like, you know, so many people that I know and so many people that I think the whole world looks up to has the material, the wealth, the goods, all of that stuff. But I think true evolution is when you don't chase the things money can buy, but you really value the things that you can't buy with money.
Oh, yeah.
100%. Family, the friendship, the relationships, that time.
That's it. Yeah. And there's a crossroads to it, too, though, because people are still like, you know, I got to value the family. But because of my, at some point, chasing those things, it allows the freedom to be able to have the time for that. So it's kind of like this double-edged sword where, like, I don't sit on my hands. I still hustle and I get down. I was telling you, this time yesterday, I was in San Antonio, Texas for a speech that I landed in 7 hours later. I'm on a stage and I fly home and... So it's a dance, but the reality is I think I got the rhythm to it down. Mm. I think sometimes you do, like the rhythm can be like, okay, I'm focused on work and only work, and then when my family time hits, I can't turn it off. Mm. So now I know how to be able to literally switch one off, switch one on, and I can keep a good pace. But it also comes with saying no to the right things, saying yes to the right things. Mm. But at the end of the day, all of it, when it boils down, none of it's worthwhile if I go home and like it's just me by my house and I don't have at least someone to have a great meal with, or have a great conversation with. So got an amazing wife. I got the kids that are happy and healthy. So it adds to a great way of looking at life. Like you're saying, it's the things you can't buy with money.
Mm. Awesome. You know, I'm curious about your work because it focuses on something that I've always believed is the foundation for success. You know, I had a speech in South Carolina a few days ago, and I spoke to a group of educators at this school district. And, you know the old question, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you answer that when you don't know what the world is going to look like 30 years from now, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you prepare a child or student for a world where you don't know what the jobs are going to be? And I say you focus on identity.
100%.
First, I want to get into identity, but you have an interesting backstory that also has to do with identity, because I feel like growing up in foster care, you must have had battles with who am I?
All the time.
Where do I belong?
I still do.
Tell me
it's
that
a human
story.
Human thing, man. Like it's, and the thing is, you say that, like, I raise kids. I have, like, that's the same thing I focus on. It's, I don't know if the world's going to have technology the same way. So do I want to stunt their growth and say, don't touch the games? Like, the world they're going to grow up into, they might need to have that skill set, right?
Yep.
I do think about there's human skills that if I can develop within you, we'll be good. But yeah, for me, like I grew up, you know, kid that was given away. No one really wanted me. Literally, my mom didn't want me. Mm. And so you get thrust into this world. The dynamics of it are tough because most people don't know what happens in, you know, the foster world. So it's a foster kid living with foster parents. The majority aren't great. There are some phenomenal foster parents, but they're not all good. And back in 1986, when I was put in, there's no TV, no social media, there's no videos. And there's a dynamic most people don't get is the foster kids, we're just trying to go back home. So we'll do and say anything to get back home. So in fact, a lot of us make up these wild stories about, you know, this family's not good, because our logic is, well, if I'm not here, then they'll send me back to my house, my mom and my dad. And we're just, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, we don't know. So some of you make stories, but then some houses really are crazy. Like for my, I can think back to times when I was, you know, put in a chicken coop and forced to run around and chase chickens to earn meals. If I didn't get to eat. If I took food, I got beaten. There's families where they would, you know, put me in shopping carts, push me down hills towards moving traffic just for the joke of it. I remember this and hitting a curb, thankfully not getting hit and getting put back in, or, you know, having to lick the bottom of people's shoes till my tongue bled just for the joke of it. Mm. So there's a lot of heinous things. And if you think about going and telling a social worker this, they go, there's no way. That's crazy. And they think you're lying. Be quiet, kid. You have a dynamic of all this stuff happening. And then you start to get a little bit older. And the more you kind of grow, the more you start learning kind of what the world is. So in my sixth house, I landed in my family, which is my current family. But I was the only black person in an all-white family. Mm. So now I have this other part of my identity. Not only am I the kid that's not really part of his family, he's a foster kid. Mm. I'm the only black kid in this whole family, whole school I'm in as well. So you get a bunch of kids that are not the nicest kids, and they know you're black, you know? Mm. So they say their words, and you get in fights. And I was fighting every week. I mean, all the time in trouble, always, you know, up and down. Part of it was that. Part of it was also not having a sense of center, we'll call it. Mm. And so because of that, like, I didn't really have a sense of feeling like I was placed. Mm. So identity was always a question. Who am I? Why am I here? Why does my own mom want me? Because she wouldn't show the visitations. So we have these visitations scheduled every, you know, month and then 2 months. And when they miss them, they elongate them. So go from being, all right, you're going to talk every, you know, we're going to meet every month. And then mom doesn't make it. All right, we'll move it to 2 months. All right, we'll make it at 3. And then eventually it's like 6 months and she never would show. And she'd give you these stories as to why she didn't.
Yeah.
Remember the one that was a running one was every time she'd miss, she'd call me. Mm-hmm. Hey, pack a bag, sit by the window. At 8 o'clock, I'm going to drive and pick you up. We're going to leave this place, me and you together, you know, as a kid, 12, 13, be like, oh yeah, you know, and every night I'd sit there, watch the cars pass by, cry myself to sleep. I'd wet the bed till I was 14. And eventually at the 14, I was like, man, I can't do this. And I finally woke up and I went to court, looked the judge in the face, looked my mom in her face and said, I no longer want you to be my mom anymore. Mm. So it's called severing parental rights. So she could no longer barricade me from sports, from being adopted. Like it freed me up. But it took 11 years in the system, 8 with that family to get there. And the whole entire time, you're crazy. You're doing a lot of craziness because you're acting out. And it's just, you never feel set. There's no stability. Mm-hmm. In fact, any prison in America, 75% of the inmates are former foster kids.
Wow.
75%. It's not an accident. It's just, we deal with a lot. So yeah, the identity question of who am I? Where do I belong? It's always been that. Mm. And even now as a grown man, I can't sit here and say none of that affects me. Mm. You know, there's a part of me that likes to be liked. Mm. I think we all as humans desire to be desired, right? It's just, I think, a natural part of us. I think I have a little bit of a better relationship with it, but a deeper understanding of it, of even to this day, I like to be desired, right? But I found that I can do that in a healthy way that doesn't diminish the people that need me. Cause I used to chop things off and I'm going to focus on work and cause I want to be desired. So my wife wouldn't get the most of me. My kids wouldn't get the most of me. But now I go, okay, well, that's we'll call it too far. I gotten too far when I'm cutting off my family. But if I can do it to a level that goes, like, I want to be desired, but in desire, I want to serve with that. So my desire comes when I want to be thanked. I want someone to go, great job. I appreciate that. And so for me, I found it's a selfishness. I want that, right? But then I go, oh, but what if I give to a level so much that I get a great thank you or great appreciation? Mm. Well, now my selfishness is driving a positive situation because I have to give you all of my heart and soul, like on a stage when I speak. If I give all of me and I get the thank you, we reciprocated something great. I gave you something, you gave me something, and everybody wins. And at the same time, I'm not on every stage and everywhere, right? Mm. Every podcast. So now, when I get that, it gives me the sense of fulfillment I need, right? I've satiated that part of me. Mm. And now I can be present with my wife and my kids and be desired there where I want to be desired.
Mm. Awesome. What you're saying is a very evolved recognition. There's a book by Chad Helmstetter, PhD, called What to Say When You Talk to Yourself. And in this book, he says the average 18-year-old says is told the words, no, or you can't thank you, or no, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. 104, I think it's 145,000 times by the time that they're 18.
Mm, it's crazy.
And reading that, it makes me think, okay, what does that do to somebody's identity?
Oh, yeah.
I'm big into, as you know, personal growth, development, mm-hmm. and I study the greats. There was a guy, his name was Maxwell Maltz. Mm-hmm. You heard of this guy?
I have, yeah.
Created Psycho-Cybernetics. For anybody who doesn't know him, he started his career as a plastic surgeon.
Really?
Yeah. He started his career as a plastic surgeon, and as he would help people, you know, really, you know, get beautiful, beautify the person, and make them perfect on the outside, what he found was that they would come back a few weeks later like, Doc, I'm still ugly.
Mm.
And he realized, actually, it's not changing the outside. There's something else,
mm-hmm.
their it's identity.
The issue.
Yeah. Yeah, that needs to change. How did you realize that this was the most important part for success?
I didn't for years, man. Mm. I wouldn't say at 15 I got it. Mm. You know, it was, I'll be honest, with a mutual friend in Brendan. You know, we were out in Jackson Hole, Wyoming with a bunch of our friends. Lewis was out there and Trent was out there and, you know, and Dean and all these great guys. And so imagine I've lived a lot of life up to this point. You know, I've gone through, you know, that 14 years old and I, you know, have a kid in college. I'm in college. I do the NFL thing. Come out of the NFL. I lose myself. My marriage falls apart. We have three kids, divorced, suicidal, like everything's crazy. And then I built it back up and, you know, remarried my ex-wife after 3 years divorce. We're 7 years now and deep into an amazing marriage and remarriage.
Mm.
And I'm sitting in this room and I'm telling this previous brand I had was called Trust Your Hustle. It was all like about, you know, get work done, right? Uh-huh. Nuanced idea, amazing, right? It's like Trust Your Hustle. And then a guy named Ethan sits in and goes, you know, I hear your story, says, I don't like it. I go, what do you mean you don't like it? Now, Grant, I'm like 3-4 years deep into building this, if not more. Like this is, I've been working on this.
Huh.
And he goes, yeah, I don't like it. And I go, what do you mean? And the whole room, you know, you feel small now, you feel embarrassed. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he goes, there's a message and a messenger. He says, the messenger is the person I can bring the message, deliver it, talk, share, speak. He says, but if the message doesn't align with that person's story or with something that's of value to the world, it's like you're gonna lose everybody. That messenger could be great, but of no use. He says, the message has to match the messenger. Even the message, if you have a great message, but the wrong messenger falls short.
Mm-hmm.
He says, if you can get the two right, you're great. He says, I like that you talk about hustle. He's like, yeah, get it. He says, but everybody in this room, which actually the woods, everybody out here, we all hustle. He says, what I want to know is, how did you get out of the foster care world without being that statistic? How did you run a business without being a statistic? How did you, you know, navigate and remarry not being a statistic? You know, the business, all these different things, your health, your parenting. Mm. He's like, how'd you navigate the different parts of your identity to get here in this room with us?
Mm.
I go, I don't know. So it was a deeper question. And you got everybody in the room like, that is a good question, Ant. So it led me to kind of go down this path of now, I had to actually contemplate an actual identity shift again.
Mm.
Because when you've built into something, that's the biggest, I guess, blockade I've noticed to moving and creating a new identity.
Mm.
So for me, I've built this business. So I can easily say I've put so much and invested so much, I can't just lose it.
Mm.
You know, whether it's a relationship someone's put time into or business you've put time into or, you know, whatever it is, you go, I put so much and invested so much.
Right.
That's who I am. I can't lose that. I go, no, it's not what you've created. It's who you are that created that.
Mm.
So for me, in that moment, thankfully, I go, that's a great idea. And by the time I had gotten home, I'd already anchored down to the thought of like, I'm going to pursue this.
Mm.
I'm gonna take what I've learned and go, I'm not starting from scratch. Mm. I'm starting with experience and knowledge and insights and more wisdom than I have when I started that previous, you know, brand.
Mm.
And I went in this new direction. And so in that, when I look at the identity of it, which I think is kind of what led me to unpack it, Eric Erickson's work in psychosocial, you know, the different levels, is a lot of it, you start seeing how we're all just built through experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So if a dog came in here right now and you got bit at one point and I didn't, you'd be like, oh my gosh, a dog. And you'd freak out, right? I'd be like, a dog. What's the difference? Same dog. It's just mm-hmm. our experience mm-hmm. in the past. And so everybody's experiences, the foster care, the nose, they wired us neurologically and psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
We just didn't know what's going on.
Mm.
Teachers, preachers, coaches, TV leaders, the news, your society, whatever environment you're in as well, it just creates this thing because all of us, we saw, you know, nurture versus nature. Like I think a lot of it is more nature than we think. There's obviously some base to who we are on a cellular level that's going to be part of our nature.
Mm.
But what comes out is like now it's like a blank CD,
mm.
right? The same CD came out, but someone wrote it differently. If you guys were back in the day, remember the CD days? And so,
wow.
So when I look at it, I go, okay,
programming.
Yeah, programming.
Mm.
And if that's the case, it tells me one that it has happened and no one's, you know, no one's devoid of the ability to change it.
Mm.
And two, it can be redone by just new experiences.
Mm.
And so what I've looked at throughout my life, I was just certain experiences. It wired me in, you know, in certain ways, programmed me in certain ways to have that identity. Mm. But here's a truth that I've come to fully believe. Mm. You cannot attain or sustain anything above your current identity.
Say that again.
You cannot attain or sustain anything above your current identity, whether it's the business you want to make that money, right? Mm. There's certain habits, actions, mindsets, tactics, whatever that take place, that if you don't identify with those, oh, I don't do that. Mm. Well, you don't get that.
Wow.
If you want to say, I want to be a baker, but I don't touch dough. Like, all right, you know, it's kind of weird. And as simple as that is, that's a reality for people. I want to have all the money. Oh, but I don't do tech. I don't talk to people. I sit back here like, well, then it's going to be hard to get the thing you want. And so when people go, well, then how do I get it if it's not who I am? Mm. Well, just put yourself through more experiences. Mm. And they're not going to be fun. They're going to be abnormal. But for the first time, maybe they're intentional. Mm. It wasn't just you sitting back waiting for things to happen. And so for me, it's as I've gone back through my life and uncovered it, I wanted to find out and look at myself and go, well, where'd you get wired that way? Mm. Why didn't you forgive? Why wouldn't you be open? Why wouldn't you share? I'm a football guy. You know, like we don't talk about that. So I go, that was a big piece of my wiring, my programming. Mm. And led me to be like in a closed off space when my marriage fell apart because my wife had an affair. So I just, as a man, when that takes place, like it just, you don't know what to do with yourself. And God forbid I tell anybody about it, you know, and I got to keep it here. And only I, and then the pressure builds. Mm. And so part of my identity was football players handle it. We could deal with it. We don't talk, you know. Mm. But that was one of the parts that would lead to almost my demise. So after the fact, I go, no, I'm human and you're human. And so this is my human experience. Can I share with you? Because maybe some I'm going through, you've gone through, and I can make better sense of it, not being the echo chamber of my mind. And so I got to step out of it and re-examine my life and then put myself into new experiences to rewire myself. Mm. And so I say, now I still battle this, right? Mm. It's not that it's a battle that is tough. It's like it's just life. Mm. You know, we're facing, every time you access a new point of success, it just opens up new problems. Mm. You know, want to make more money? Now you got to pay the tax man. Mm. You know, you got to pay the tax man. Okay, how do you make sure you can, you know, survive in the long term and not go crazy? Or maybe all of a sudden, I want to get an amazing wife. Great, you find the wife. Now she wants to do things you didn't want to do. You want to grow together, right? There's just nuances. All these pieces of life that become the success points are just new problems. So if I look at that and go, okay, well, I just want to be a person who almost enjoys problems.
Yeah, it almost enjoys problems.
Enjoys them. Wow, okay. And it's not to say that from a negative standpoint, but
I get what you mean.
You know what I mean? Like, if I'm used to being in that, it's like guys that play football or basketball or soccer or sports, or when you get in the field, you know it's hard, but you love playing the game. Mm. And so it's when you fall in love with that whole process, then I'm like, cool, I'm going to figure out who I am today. A lot of the feedback I get about myself, I'm open to. That wasn't always right. My wife will give me feedback. My kids will give me feedback. Mm. Before you're like, no, I'm the ego rears up. Mm. And now I'm open to it, man. Mm. I may not be perfect. I'm not perfect, obviously. But I try not to protect the ego, because if I protect the ego, which is protecting my identity, my identity never grows. I don't get to attain or sustain that thing. Mm.
My favorite definition I ever heard about for the ego was ego, edging God out. Mm-hmm. Pushing God out. Yeah. And for God, you replace God with love, pushing love out and pulling fear in. Mm-hmm. Allowing yourself to be consumed. Yeah. I love everything that you just said. I think the biggest takeaway from what you just said is that the personality is plastic, right? All of the advancements in, you know, neuroplasticity tell us we can change the brain.
Yeah.
We can shift. It can be difficult, right? Oh, My friend Bruce Lipton, he says, the Jesuits, they used to say, show me a child at the age of 7 and I'll show you the man. Mm-hmm. Because they knew from 0 to 7, this is when you're getting programmed.
Yeah.
And that program is going to dictate the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. But you can change it.
Yeah, I did.
It takes time. Yeah. So before we get out of the sauna, because we're both sweating like crazy.
That's all right.
What do you say to people who they're like, I am who I am?
So there's a guy, I think it's Gay Hendricks, said this. He says, if you fight for your limitations, you get to keep them. Right? It's one of my favorite ones. If we battle to fight and say it is who I am, well, then the experience you have, that's what you get to keep, my man. Now, if you desire to have something more, the reality is to accept that there's something more to be. But it's not that you... Here's, I think, the fear for people is. They go, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. I found some weird metaphor in my brain of like a house. You live in a house that was built. Mm-hmm. The house is your identity. And the fear most people have is being homeless. If this isn't who I am, I'm just out in the streets. I don't know who I am. And I go, that's not the case, right? Mm-hmm. Meaning, you can leave that house. Say you identify as the guy that does drugs and parties, right? You can leave that house and go to church one day. Mm-hmm. Go across the street and you can put the foundation for a new house. Go back to that house, live with your friends, right? Eventually get a different job. You go back to that. You build the structure. You start building the structure of the house. Mm. You're still living the same lifestyle. And then, you meet, a couple of new friends and they introduce some new books. You go back to the house and you start, putting some nice, furniture in place. Eventually over time, you found yourself in a situation where you've got a better house. And you were never homeless. You just simply left the house and went across the street. Mm. Most people are either so fearful of being homeless or building a new house, they get stuck in that same house. They go, this is who I am. I go, it's not who you are. It's who you have built to now, but you can continue building. Mm. Most of us were builders. For all of us, if you think about it, I like making puzzles. I don't want to say it, but when the puzzle's done, I'm like, oh, now what? you want to do a new puzzle? I like the puzzle process. Mm-hmm. And so if we're naturally builders, it's like, you've just been building and you've kept building and ingrained the same person. Mm. So yes, I get it's who you are, but you're losing nothing at all to create this next level. And now why you think you go, oh, I'm going out. I got to start from scratch. Mm. No. It's like you built this amazing house, the first one, right? Mm. When you build the second one, you now know how to use a level and a hammer and a drill. You still got to do the work, but the skill sets are a little more refined. You can do it faster, in fact. Mm. And then you get what you want. Mm. That's the idea. So no one can sit here and go, oh, this is who I am, unless you are okay with what you have. And if you want more, you got to become more.
Yeah, every part of us is changing. The skin, the lung, the every organ, our taste buds, everything changes. I think in 7 years, we're a totally new human.
It's true.
Say pretty much, right? Mm-hmm. But this mind can have such inertia. It can keep us stuck.
Yeah.
But I think that recognition that we can change, that our future doesn't have to be dictated by our past. When we can surrender to that, that's when we're free.
Yeah.
That's when we're free.
It's just latching though, man.
Mm.
I found too is, I'll finish with that. So I feel like, but this, my mind's going, man, is I have conversations and I think what happens is people, there's such an attachment to what I've invested in, an investment bias. Yeah. I got to hold on to this. And they go, well, if I have to give up all of me. Mm. And I think that's the fear is you do have to give up all of you to create the new thing. And most people, it's all they have.
Yeah.
So they fight tooth and nail to keep this persona. It's like you're fighting to keep, it's kind of like if I'm trying to swim to the surface and I'm drowning and I got this anchor holding me down and eventually realize that the anchor's not attached to me. I'm holding onto the rope.
Mm.
And if you let go of the rope, you can rise again. But most people are holding onto that rope like crazy. And so if they can let go of it, you rise at the top.
Mm. You mentioned a word that I always say, I always tell people the word persona. So personality comes from the word persona, meaning mask. They knew that the personality was just a mask. You can take it off. You can put another one on.
Yeah.
You can change, the possibility for changing.
Untethered Soul talks about that.
Who's that?
Michael Singer, the Untethered Soul.
Okay. Listen. Yeah. Actually, so I wanted to get into that because I feel like what Singer talks about is the deepest identity, right? That which doesn't change is the beingness.
Yeah.
Like there's the human that has this job and that job and the family and the body grows and then falls apart. But that beingness, how do you feel about the identity with the beingness?
I like it because I have moments where you go recall, like when you're sitting there talking to yourself. That's what his work's about, right? It's the untethered soul. There's a you inside of you. Have you ever had a conversation with yourself? You're having a conversation with something, right?
Mm.
And then it's an expression, right? Be honest, the way I'm expressing myself now is different than when I'm on stage or when I'm with my wife or I'm at football practice, right? Doesn't mean I'm a different person. It's just who the being chose to express in that moment, right? If I'm yelling at you like I'm at football practice in the field, it's kind of weird, So the idea is we have this, but there is a person behind the scenes.
Mm.
And I think that's true because I can go back to a lot of moments where that person was the one really making the choices.
Mm.
At one point, my youngest son, he has ADHD and he's a headache. I had it too growing up, but he's just and so I was just getting on him. And one day my wife goes, you're doing it wrong. And I'm like, no, my ego comes in. No, I'm not. It's I did this right. Mm. And I went to sleep and I woke up the next morning. She had stayed up late. I woke up to 25 articles in my email that she had went and found to send me all these points of how I'm wrong. And so I got up before everybody else I usually do. And I went and got some tea, sat in the front of my house and I started reading them.
Huh.
Within the first three or four, I'm like, I'm wrong.
Wow.
By the next 20, 100% wrong. Now I had a choice. The guy inside, he knew was wrong, but the guy being expressed didn't want to admit it for, like this day. Oh, I don't want to, then I got to lose face to my wife. And so I was battling with me and I was aware of the conversation. I go, that's not best for my son.
Mm.
It's not the best for my wife and the best for me. And so I went in, I was like, I'm wrong, love.
Mm.
100%. So that guy got to express differently.
Mm.
And it's transformed the entire relationship I have with him, how my wife and I have a, because when you're mean to one of your wife's kids, you know, it sounds weird. Like they're my, or our children, right? We're together, but for her, it's her kid, you know? Interesting. When you're mean to your wife's kid, it's like, well, what, you know, it's the mama bear comes up. And obviously all my blood children, but that's the thing that dynamically happens. Now it's my son as well. And I love him, but I love him differently because I'm dad and I got to raise him differently. But have an understanding of how she was seeing things and how I wasn't benefiting him. I had to step back and admit, put the ego away. I call it everyone's greatest obstacle.
Oh, I like that one too. That might be my new favorite.
So I had to get that out of the way. And when I did, it freed me up. So now we have a great relationship. We do a morning routine every day. We spend time. We butt heads. We're men, you know. But at the same time, if that moment doesn't happen, I'm not able to get to the next moments that are great with him.
You chose love. Well, let's stop battling this heat. Let's get out. Let's get some whatever we got, some coconut water or spring water.
And, sounds good.
Yeah, man. Great.
And those are parts two of it.
It's a part two. It's the spa. All right. We go from the sauna, the sweat, and then we go to the spa, the relaxation. Let's do it. So I was watching a video of yours, and I absolutely loved it. I think it was you on a podcast. Could have been Growth Day, which is an amazing platform. Yeah. But you were talking about your productivity method, how you group out the things that you have to do.
Yeah.
Break that down for me, because I wrote it down and I was like, this is genius. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
So
I was just doing this on the way here.
Okay.
I kid you not, I do it all the time. Well, I do it whenever I get a window to like look and try to be out. So I'll preface it with this is the problem I've noticed with most people is they're trying to schedule their lives, but they're trying to do it in the next 2 weeks. And the problem that you have is your next 2 weeks is usually almost always booked. So I go, let's start this whole thing with trying to get 5 weeks out. So for me, I started doing this where I go, well, when I go 5 weeks out, there's nothing there. So if I want to put new things in, well, let's put them out there and I'll run into it, you know? And so if I want to add things like a new morning routine, or I want to pick up a new habit, or even if I want to start working out, sometimes Mondays are the best because your Monday doesn't have room for it. So you go, oh, I'm too busy. You push it aside. But if you start in 2-3 weeks, it gives you some window. And then what I do, okay, I want to be able to have time. And then I got to also be able to figure out how I put the right things in the time. So the other part of it was I started looking at my life and going, okay, I'm going to say I have 5 weeks out. Let's say, you know, and if the 3 weeks beyond the two, I have time to put in. Well, what goes in that? And how do I structure things? What, you know, and I started looking at all the things that I had to get done that were burying me. Because most of the time in real time, like right now, if I don't have anything scheduled and organized, I'm thinking about everything I have to do. So it's all in my head. So I'm working on project A, but really I'm still holding on to B, C, D, E, F. So I'm never fully focused on project A. So I started getting to a point where I go, well, what if I just found a way to relieve myself of that stress, and how do I do it? Well, if I have trust that they're where they're supposed to be and scheduled, I can let them go. So I did is start going, looking at my projects, and then I go, okay, I'm gonna put these all out. And then I started having too many projects. I go, I can't do all of these in 3 weeks. So I started being honest. I go, which ones need to be in the 3 week period or 3 month period, whatever, and which ones need to be 6 months out to a year. So I started looking at it. And we're talking about dogs a minute ago. It felt like a dog owner. And here's how it feels like it. Imagine all these 10 dogs are in this playpen, but they're all asleep, right? They're not being worked on because they're asleep. They can fit. The moment they wake up though, it's a madhouse. So I go, so they can't all be awake and running around. Some of these animals, some of these ideas, right? They gotta be given away. I can't have the idea. I gotta be put to sleep. So some ideas, they don't belong in our life. Let's just be honest. There's ideas I've had. At one point, I wanted to open a place called Trucks as Trunks. I like subwoofers, right? So I'm like, I'm gonna put subwoofers in cars, you know? In high school, I'm like, that's an idea I need to kill off. It doesn't need to be in my life. So you move things away, and then you end up finding, all right, I got five left, but I can really only have like two or three awake and two have to be asleep. And so that's the ones I put out 3 months, 6 months, you know? So there's maybe 3-4 projects that I'm working on. And I go, these are the projects. Now what I do is I look at each project and I go, I got to put it in my calendar. What most people do is they go, oh, well, on Wednesday, I'm going to start a podcast. And you wake up Wednesday and you start trying to do work. And I got 8 hours to it. It's a whole other psychological dynamic. Inc. magazine did a study and found that in the average working day of 8 hours, most people on average can get a focus work 2 hours and 57 minutes of work done.
Wow.
So people will go, I'm going to do this all 8 hours. And you show up to that day and it's like, no, man, your brain could only hang for two. So now you feel crappy because you didn't get stuff done in the 8 hours when you just scheduled it incorrectly. So I look at my calendar. I go, okay, great. Here's these little hours, these things. I got to put things into the hours. What I'm not going to do is be naive and go, on Wednesday, I'm going to start a podcast. I spend time going, what individual pieces comprise the whole? So everything I have, like I'll show you my calendar if you want. Like I can show you everything. It's my to-do tasks. And on the left of it, every one of them has a number. And me knowing myself, how I think and the research I've done, I know how many hours it'll probably take to do that. So what I do, and I may be wrong. Sometimes I'm overboard, sometimes I'm underboard, whatever it is. And I'll show you how that it helps it fix itself out.
But if I don't know how to do something, I'll add like, you know, 50% of the time. I go, I think it's four. Let's make it six, right? Mm. And so now I look at a calendar and I go, all right, I have open space. Mm. And then I have these projects that are segmented by hours. I go to my open space. I go, what life do I want to live? Do I want to say I'm a good father and a good husband? Mm. Where's date night? Where's dad day? Where's my workouts? Where are these things put in? Those go in first. And this is on my white space. And then I look at the next thing. I go, okay, great. Now that all the we'll call it appointments and meetings are in, I get a highlighter and I highlight all the open space that is places to put projects. I then go back to my paper and I go, let me take these projects and I infuse them in over 5 weeks. And so now if it's like project A and it's going to be 6 hours, all right, on day one, I'm going to do project A, you know, hour one of six and two of six. And I'm going to go take lunch and I'm not going to work on project A now. I'm going to move that on Wednesday, right? Or Friday, I'm going to do hour three and four, right? So I spread all the way out. Same thing for B and same thing for C. And so now I know when they're going to get done as long as I can stay on task. And I can also still live my life the way I want to live my life and there's no problems. Now, say, for example, life happens. People go, it sounds great, but Ant, life happens. I know life happens, but I've designed a modular system. So I can go, all right, I'll build in like a release valve. So for me, usually Wednesday or Thursday, I put a couple hours that has nothing there. Nothing at all. It's just there. So if for some reason, my wife goes, hey, can you do this or fix this? The other day, my son, my wife dropped him off to go fishing. He kept the electric key in his pocket. He's off in the woods. My wife drives a target, gets the target. Hey, I can't leave. I go, okay, great. So I had to leave my house, an hour round trip to go where I needed to go get to get her the key. And I'm like, I can move my life. I go, okay, what do I got? Let's adjust this. I'm still on track. Because some people, they go, I fell off track, and they stay off track. And they get frustrated. We never get back on. It allows me to stay on track. But also, when I calculate the time, say it was 6 hours, I get in and I go, it was only two. I got ahead of the game. I got four to mess with. What can I do? Let me pull project B forward, project C forward by the different hours. Erase, write it back in. Now I'm ahead of the game. And the good thing is when I do it this way, I'm never behind schedule because all the projects I put in place have deadlines that are first usually self-imposed. So you just create a deadline that's realistic, right? And put in place where I, if it's for somebody else, I put it 3 or 4 days ahead of the due date to give myself the working time. And then when 2:45 hits and my kids got to get picked up from school, I can be dad because I'm not worried about it's undone. Here's the one thing I tell people is you got to be at peace with the pieces. If piece 2 and 3 of 6 are done, be at peace with that. It's scheduled where it's supposed to be. The book's not finished yet. I know it's not finished, but I've got it scheduled for the next 6 months to get done. It's where it's supposed to be. And so I can turn it off and be very present with my family because it's where it's supposed to be. So that's a very shortened down process. I teach this actually to a lot of clients over a time frame. Because I have my own planner. It's a GPS planner. I created my own because I'm like, I need it. It's not magic, right? It's a planner, bro. It's not like, but the system is what I teach.
You got your own planner that people can download or buy.
Yeah, you could buy it. Yeah. Okay. I mean, you could ship it out. We have a whole bunch of the house. Because at one point I wanted my own because I made it for me. I'm not going to be lying. I made it for me. Because I was buying planners and I'm like, this is not the amount of hours I want. Then also like I get a planner. It's like 2 months. And I'm like, I need a long, I don't want to be having to change planners every 2 or 3 months. Or there's too many assessments or quizzes. Or I just, you know, people have different ways of doing it. For my brain, I have a simple thing at the bottom we call roots and fruits. The way I analyze my life in 10 areas. And then from there, I'm marketing every week, but then I have my planner just a straight open 1 week and I got 9 months in the planner. And it's good for my brain because I like to create on paper and then transfer to digital.
Okay. I was just going to ask you if you prefer paper to digital.
And the way you do it is, and most people go, it's 5 weeks. Yeah. You do the 5 weeks one time. And then every Sunday or Monday, I just add a week. But it's a week away. So I'm not worried about rushing to do it next week. If I'm a little bit slow and I get it done by Tuesday, it's still a month away. But it also gives me the ability where like that 2 hours on Wednesday, here's the key part. I can now say no to things without feeling guilty.
Yeah, that's great.
Right, we talked about the desirability of being desired. We had the, I want to be desired. So if I have time, I'll find it. And I go, no. If I said yes to my time, I want that when it shows up. Maybe I'll take my wife to lunch or I'll watch a TV show, but it's my time. I'm not going to give it to you, right? So if I've got that segmented, I can now say no because I've already said yes to something else. And so when I put it that far out, it allows me to like, I don't adjust it. If you want to like talk to me, there's very few people, yourself, one of them, I'll go, let me move my time around to make this work, right? But the majority, and it's not a knock on them, it's in any way, it's just out of a relationship with you. I know you want to have your podcast or, and I love you as a human, but I love me as a human first. and my family first. So I got time in 3 weeks. Here's the time I have. And if it's not okay with you, then we could just wait. But it's always going to be 3 weeks out. And so I can say no, and I can live a fluid life, stress-free, and things settle in properly.
So awesome. So awesome. Yeah, it blew my mind listening to this whole process. How do we find the planner?
The GPSplanner.com.
GPS planner. Okay.
GPSplanner.com. Because I call it goal, plan, start. Because the whole thing I just talked about is the goal of what I want and how I plan it, right? What's the plan? We just talked about the plan. What's my start day? I think also for a lot of people, they put deadlines on actions days. So I think a deadline's great. When's it got to get done? But a lot of us procrastinate.
Yeah.
So I go, let me get an action day. Because think about it. If you know it's going to take you 6 hours, you'll push it off till that 6 hours on the line. My son does this. I hate it. I used to do it too, right?
Yeah, we all
now do. I go, all right, I know that product's going to take 6 hours. What's the action day for me? When will I start it? I might start it 2 weeks out. I'm a dream for speeches when I go, because they go, all right, the speech is 3 months out. We need slides, 3 days before. And I have it 3 days after we had the call. How'd you do that? I go, well, I know it's going to take me 30 to 60 minutes for this. I saw a space in my calendar. I put it in. You now have it. I don't got to think about it for 3 months. And I've organized it in a place to where when I run my life for speeches, I don't even think about the speech. So I'm on the flight, but I know the questions I ask. I know my notes I have. I know where I store my slides, when I'm going to review them. So I'm always dialed in, locked in day of, but I don't want to have the weight of like, I got to get this slides for a speech done. Because then that weighs on you. And now my wife, you may not think of it, but like this is pulling at you. It's a quiet nag. And so I like to be at peace. And when I can do that, I could be with you right here. I have no idea what's the rest of my day really going to happen. You know, I know I'm gonna go check emails and stuff, but like, I'm not stressed out any of it. So I can be very present with you.
Wow. Cause you've got it organized. That's going to help a lot of people. GPSplanner.com.
Yep. The GPSplanner.com.
Awesome. That sounds awesome. Anthony, I read a study the other day, and it said that as a Sports Illustrated study, and it said that an estimated 80% of NFL players after they retire, 3 years after they retire, they go broke.
Yeah, they do.
Why are you not in this statistic?
I think there's a psychological reason, and there's also like a habitual, like actions, habit reason, right? There's a way that I function. One of the ways is, I think for me, I'm built to be a worker. Like I'm bad with idle hands. I'm like a builder. I create. I like to be in the motion and doing things. And some guys get done and they just like are tired. They don't want to work anymore, right? And so not that it's a knock, but it's like the amount of effort they were giving, they just don't give anymore. And when you don't give to the universe, I don't think it gives back to you. So part of that, I think some guys get done and they've, given their time and it's like, I just don't feel like giving anymore. And it just all of a sudden goes away. But I think a heavier piece of it is the psychology of it. So two parts, we've talked about ego. I think whenever I get done with the game, and I did, I'm a former NFL athlete, man. Hey, I'm dope, bro. You don't know me, you know? I'm not going to work with the plebs. It's like this mentality. Now, it may not come out like that. You won't have it stated that way. But there's this like, you want to do that? Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not doing all that. Like, I don't want to get a job, work with people. I'm not going to, do this regular stuff. And so people don't dive back in to the day one mentality of like getting back to work. I think the ego, I've noticed for a lot of guys, they want the end result, but they're not willing to go back to who they were when they were playing youth football. The kid who was learning, he was brand new and he wanted, he didn't have an ego, right? He was open to learning things. And so that's part of it. And then I think with that, another part of it's like, because I'm great, maybe I have some money, I want my money to make me money. I'm going to let my money make me money. And that's all I'm going to do. But they keep spending as if money's coming in. And so you spend as if money's coming in. You want your money to make you money, which you got to put it out there. And there's people who are investors who are bad investors who didn't play football, right? So like that part ties into it. And then I think also I think whenever you're in that realm of trying to be important, because you are important when you get done, if your attachment is to the game and you are the football player, you're trying to find ways to be relevant again. And that leaves you running around doing things with your guys that are still playing and you're just the guy used to play, right? So they're spending at a certain level and you're operating at a certain level, or you just don't have good money habits. Literally, some guys just don't have the upbringing or the experience of how
education.
To handle money.
Yeah.
And so a lot of things tie into it. And it's not any one thing. I think there's different parts of it. But I've talked to my agent. He's like, I love that you didn't go bankrupt. I got close. I'm not going to lie. I came home and I was like, I'm opening this gym and doing stuff. And mine was more of a bad awareness of business and what it took. Because I was still working. I was training 9-year-olds. I had no ego around it. I wasn't great with money knowing where it went. So at one point, I was close to bankruptcy. But I did what I think a lot of anybody should do, even non-athlete, was like hired a coach. Man, I was like, tell me what I'm doing wrong. When I played in the NFL, I had a coach. Because coaches, while you can see what's in front of you, they see the field. So I go, let me see what I don't see. got some insights and so started making some adjustments and changes and built it up. And my agent's like, that, he says, you had the willingness to go and get help. But he says, also, you've always like been like open to just trying things and working towards things. You just do work. And so I've always just done work. And so I think that's a big piece. And then I also have this one, this is my own little caveat, is I don't care for like the materialistic things. Mm-hmm. I don't care to have like, I don't got Jordans. I don't have, not that Jordan's a big thing, but some guys got walls of Jordans, yeah, right? And yeah. I got to have the Gucci belts and Louis Vuitton. I need the Ferrari. The most I have is like the necklace I'm probably wearing and a bag like that I got when I was playing, you know? Mm-hmm. But most of the time in my house, bro, I'm flip-flops and old shorts because I still wear them. I think my wife and I were smart about it. Our kids don't have any vices. We don't have this attached to these materialistic things because we haven't found them to bring us joy. So like we might take nice trips and make great experiences, but we are regular humans, man. And I think whenever I started having a very good comfort with just being a regular guy, then you're good. Because here's the interesting thing. One time I met a guy in a plane and I had a deep conversation with him. And he was the man, chest all up, great. He happened to be like the president of an association for home HVAC filters. Mm-hmm. But in his world, oh, he was the king, you know? And this guy, he was the NFL player in his world. Mm. He was the guy. And I go, there are millions of little worlds one, you're not part of and don't matter. Wow. And two, they don't care you exist. Mm. So why get high in your haunches? Mm. So for me, I've always been in this state of mind of like, as long as I'm good in my world, my friends, my wife, the people I impact directly, I'm golden. Yeah. I don't gotta be this guy that puffs my chest and walks around. And so I don't need to buy the things that make me look that way and do the things that have me out and about. So I just, I'm very happy at home.
Yeah.
I will sit on my couch with my dogs and my wife and my kids. And that's 100% cool with me, man.
Yeah. That's it. I mean, I think you've got it figured out. It was Jim Carrey who said, I wish everybody could get rich and famous so that they could find out that won't make them happy.
Yeah.
Honestly, it kind of comes back to identity. We wear Gucci and Louis Vuitton and all these other people's names.
Yeah.
We don't wear ourselves.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's true. Nothing crazy wrong. Because a part of it also, this is a battle I have to have. Because I'm the same. I don't want to be rich and famous that same way, but I also do want to be rich. Mm. It's a guy named Myron Golden. He's about making money. And I had a great conversation when I was speaking at ClickFunnels alongside him. He's like, the way that he looks at biblical aspects of money and not being wrong. But it's like, if you look at the way the world is built, you don't just get money randomly. Mm. It's because you get value.
That's it.
Right? So if I give a ton of value to the world, I want to be desired. Right? I give a ton of value. The thank you, sometimes, oftentimes, in the business side, is going to come to me monetarily. Mm. I do a really good job. They pay me well to be on stage. Right? Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
On top of that, I also know that I want to have a purpose for the money I make. Mm. So like I want to give to people. I want to make sure I can find a way, because the world moves by money. So if I can find a way to make a bunch of money, but do a lot of great things with it, there was nothing wrong with it. As long as I made it in an honest way, which I do. So for me, I desire to make money because it means I'm making value for the world, but also making opportunities for other people.
What's the old mistranslation of
money's the root of all?
Money's the root, right? It's the love of money, right? That attachment to it. I think it was Rockefeller. He said, I wanted to spend the first half of my life making as much money as I can and the next half giving it all away.
Yeah,
I like principles. I like ideas like this. It's a means. Yeah.
It's an identity thing too.
Yeah. Oh, it's huge. A lot of people have unhealthy. I know I did have, and I probably still have some subconscious blocks when it comes to money. Mm-hmm. Wanting to hold on to it, wanting to keep it. And
you know, I heard one time some guy goes, money is called currency because you have to give out so the current can flow back to you.
Mm.
It's an interesting one.
That's good.
And it may be investing or maybe value, but you got to give out to it. And it's the one thing we all are experiencing and navigating, money and making it, spending and investing in it. It's one of the common things for all of us. And so it's we all have funny relationships. I grew up poor too. So like it wasn't a good relationship at all. We never talked about it. There's never a discussion. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, like how do you get good at something you never talk about?
Yeah. Well, it's what you said. The cave you fear holds a treasure you seek. You got to go into it. You got to surrender. It's going to hurt.
Yeah.
You say embrace the suck.
Yeah, I do.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And part of that suck is like you're talking about, it's my identity goes, money's hard. Mm. It's so difficult. You don't deserve money. Your identity says that. And so you live in a way to make it right. See, he told you, right? Mm. Or you go like, no, money's abundant. I want to be a person who has money. I want to be a person of abundance. Mm. And you state that and there's this cognitive dissonance. your brain goes, that's not who you are. And when you have that thought, it's not who you are, you'll act in a kind of way to do that. So you have to push past that with actions and habits. You have to show yourself by actions a proof of who you actually can be or who you are in the future. But the actions are unconfident actions, out of character actions, out of identity actions. It's not who you are, but that's the only way to create experiences to become that.
That's it. Proof. The proof. I want to talk about something that so many of us can relate to. I know you have a very deep relationship to this. I do as well. Death. One of my favorite books, the Tibetan Book on Living and Dying. It says, of all footprints, those of the elephant are supreme. Mm-hmm. And of all meditations, meditating upon death is supreme. Death for me, seeing it, embracing it, it has allowed me to live fully. It's kind of like the ultimate life hack. You have a story that you share about your mother and why you do what you do now. It's not for necessarily your acclaim, but it's to kind of raise her up.
Yeah.
Get into that a little bit.
So my mom was I think for me, 100% the reason I'm not a statistic. Now I have an amazing wife and I've had amazing friends and colleagues, but they got to be later in life. You know, my mom, adoptive mom is who I'm speaking of. When she got me, I was 6 and I was a bad little kid. Like I broke a couple lamps the first week I was told, like all the things, you'd be like, get rid of this kid, get him out of my house. And she loved me past the crazy. Because when you're also in those situations, the one thing you don't do is trust very well. You just don't do it. I'm not going to trust anybody because the people that I want to trust, they don't even create moments I can trust. My own mom, you know? So it took years and eventually like there was just moments. And when I talked about I got in front of a judge, it was because one day my mom had done that thing where she just didn't come by and I'm crying myself to sleep. And this woman's here moment after moment, just consoling me, giving me the love that I've been seeking for so long. And at 14, my maturity kicked in maybe. And I go, God, why don't I just let her love me? You know, so she loved me. And it was great because while we didn't have much, there was a great teaching of perspective and humanity. And I got to understand like social and racial dynamics and where I fit and how she framed things for me. But yeah, I mean, my mom was, you know, she wasn't a successful person. We didn't have much money at all. My mom didn't work very much. Like I'll tell you right now, like she's not the reason I'm successful in business, right? It's just she as a human nurtured me at the level I needed to at the time. And so she, when I turned 14, I got adopted. She also got diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. It's autoimmune disease. If anybody doesn't know, it eats the myelin sheath. Your body eats the myelin sheath around your nerves. So your control is, you know, it goes out the window. You can't control, you can't move. And so eventually your body just over time just shuts down. 17 years after she, you know, had her kickoff with it, she passed away. And I was in the room. I was sitting there with my mom in a hospital bed, my dad opposite me, and my grandma on my dad's shoulders. The rest of my family was there, but they had just taken off. And we were told like this would be a couple hours. So, you know, you guys can go get a nap, get some food while we take her off this life support thing she was on. So she's going to be good. And then, you know, maybe 15 minutes, we're watching. And then all of a sudden, her heart rate out of nowhere starts to drop. Her breathing gets kind of slower. And then we watch her inhale and just exhale her final breath. I remember like looking at my dad and like just, you know, the moment when somebody realizes like, and you just, I felt it with him and like his eyes just tears shot out and he's crying. My grandma's crying and I'm crying. And like, it was an interesting moment because for me, it's twofold. One, I was at peace or had a little bit of joy, I want to call it, because I knew my mom was finally at peace. Because was a very lively person. She was like life at a party, kind of jokey all the time, you know, just kind of, she was just loose. And so to see her not be able to be her, like it was like she was trapped in this body. And so I finally got to see my mom, you know, in a sense, like she's free again. And the other side of it, I had shame. And the shame of it was like, gosh, this woman who couldn't even live her life physically, her body wouldn't let her. I'm not in a good place. This time in my life, I'm divorced. I'm living in a 500 square foot apartment with my kids on an air mattress next to me. I'm not doing much for the business. Like I'm just kind of floating. Like I call it my fog. It was like a fog phase of my life. And I'm going, gosh, if she raised me to be this and I have the capabilities for more, how am I just doing this? How's this my existence just this minuscule right now? And it was for me a catalyst to like to get better. Now I wish I could say, because you know, I'm human, that all of a sudden I went home and life turned around like Tony Robbins and I ran out of the bathtub and I'm, you know, on the beach and going. It wasn't like that for me. It was me going back to what I knew for a good another 14 more months. What it really was waking up on, I think it was January 1st, 2016. As some strange woman in the bed because I'd flown from Russia. I don't think I'm a cool guy, you know? And then, you know, I got a hook on my mouth and I'm hungover. I look in the mirror and I go, I hate this guy. Like, this is just a horrible human. And the trajectory I was going was going to end with me ending my life in a place that wouldn't have been of purpose to my mom or honor my mom. It wouldn't have been a use to the world. It would have been a drag in the world. And I think that kind of thought of like reflecting back on my mom's passing and then what was heading for me, a path I was heading down, that woke me up. Mm. It's interesting because I do often think about death. I don't talk about it with people, especially my wife, because I travel a lot and she's like, she just want me thinking and talking about it. Like, I think there's a thing of like, don't think about it, talk about it because it's bad juju. As a man of faith, I don't believe that there's like luck or, you know, it's my time, it's my time, you know? Mm. But because of that, I live in two ways presently. Mm. In one way, I live in a space where I'm actively aware of what could take place. So I'm heavily grateful for now. Mm. Like I'm heavily grateful for all moments, like the more than I probably should. Mm. One, because I know it could end, but two, because I know where it could have been for me statistically. Mm. Like I could very well not be here, right? And so I could have been in jail or, you know, homeless, very well could have been. So I go, the fact that I'm sitting here with an amazing man, like talking about, this is not a norm for a kid that grew up in my lifestyle. I know that. I don't take it for granted. I love all parts of it. The other part of it for me is I go, it makes me live life in a way to where if it was my last, it was a good one. And every day is like this. And it doesn't mean every day I'm going out and trying to shoot for the stars and be the, you know, but some days it's just like, did I hang on the couch and watch a movie with my daughter?
Yeah.
Where her last memory was dad on the couch watching a movie with her dad. You know, like, did I live in a way that if I took a trip and I met somebody that I didn't know, they go, that was it, that guy at the airport. I didn't know him, but I saw his, he helped me out with something, you know, like. So I'd live my life in the quiet moments, like the dark moments, so that when my life comes to light someday, when I'm no longer here, that I lived it right.
Yeah.
And in that exact process, I'm living this kind of consistent flow of I just talked about this yesterday. It's funny we're talking about death. A year ago, a kid on my football team, my son's football team, I didn't coach last year, named Braden Fahey. He's a 12-year-old kid. In the middle of practice, brain aneurysm, he falls down and dies. I mean, I can't imagine the thought of like the parents, what goes on. So yesterday I flew home and there was a moment of silence for him in remembrance of the year. Mm. And I gave a little mini talk and this was kind of the parts of the talk. I said, within life, we have three M's. We have these moments we live in, right? Life is consistently moments, always the moments. It's what we're, right now is a moment. It's all we can really live in, right? Mm. And then from the moments, we have memories, right? So in some of the moments, there's great memories. Some of the moments, there's bad memories. But the third M for all of it is one that circles back to the moments. It's the motivation. And I don't mean motivation like hoorah motivation. I'm like, what's my motivation to be a great person, a great dad or a great coach or great anything? It's because there was a moment that took place and maybe this was a bad moment for this kid losing his life and it created a memory of this kid and what could be gone tomorrow. Mm. That becomes my motivation to live life fully in the moments. Mm. And so there's been a cycle that I didn't even think about till yesterday. I'm like, what do I talk about? And I'm like, that's I think where I've always lived my life and I do now when I think about death is there's a consistent moment I'm living in now because it could be gone. Mm. And that moment I live creates a memory. Now, I can't control the moments. I can control my response to them or my perspective of them. Mm. And good or bad, they create memories that live in me, that that make my identity what it is. Mm. And from those memories, I'm motivated to love or to give graciousness or to be, you know, appreciative or to be a fighter, whatever it may be. But that's what's because I want to make sure the moments lived right. Mm. So that's kind of how my active relationship with death is.
Mm. Beautiful. Love that. The three pillars, the moments, the memories, and the motivation. That's awesome. That's awesome. It's something that has motivated some of the most successful people, not just of our time, of all time.
Yeah.
You know, the Stoics, they would keep the skull on their desk side, mm-hmm. the memento mori, remember that you will die. Yeah, it really does come down to the moments and it's so fleeting, this whole life. So it's like,
yeah,
live in the moment, create the memories and be fully motivated to serve, to help, to walk the talk, which is absolutely what you do.
Mm. Try every day, man. Mm. I do every day as best I can. But this is one of the things that makes it like centered for me is I'll go to a speech just yesterday, probably this exact time we'll call it. Might've been this exact time. I was outside of a room with a line of 100 people signing books and autographs, you know, asking all that's, you know. And then I left that and I went to the airport and not a soul knew me.
Yeah.
You know, and so yep. Part of it's like it's weird to say like you're not that important, but that's a good thing. It's an okay thing because you're important where you need to be.
Yeah,
and then when you're gone, like it's tough. I don't know who said it one time, but like no one's gonna remember us in 100, 200 years. There's few people that'll be remembered, and if they are remembered, it may not be what you actually did. It could have been what history wrote.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like you said, like death's coming, man. Mm. So don't be afraid of it, because I think when you're afraid of it, you live in ways that I think bring it closer to you.
Mm.
You're tight, you kind of restrict yourself, you don't expand, you don't even live a full life out of fear of what could be.
Mm. There's this meditation I love. It comes from the late monk who I think passed away this year, Thich Nhat Hanh, might have been last year.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a hugging meditation where he says, if you're in an argument with your beloved, or maybe even if you're not in an argument, what you do is you embrace them, give them a hug, take a deep breath. You try to think of where you two will be 300 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You'll be gone. You'll be forgotten. You'll be and you just hold that memory in your mind, or that thought in your mind. And when you release the embrace, you come back and you look at your beloved and you realize whatever you were fighting about is so silly.
Pointless.
I love what you said. We've got such a short time here. Let's embrace again. Let's
I agree. Yeah, my son and I were just talking about this. I have a different way of thinking the same thing. I love that. I never heard of that. And I go, whenever I have like really bad things going on, I think about being on a cloud. And I can picture, because I've been in an airplane, right?
Mm.
I look down at all these cars passing by and I picture it kind of like ants. I've never looked at an ant colony and gone, well, I wonder what they're fighting about. Mm. What's going on? It doesn't matter, because it's just the machines moving.
Mm.
And so I look at myself and I go, the problem that's eating away at me right now, it's just me.
Yeah.
It's maybe there's somebody else, but like in the grand scheme of things, it's not worth it, man.
Yeah.
I'm not a pacifist and like never fight. Mm. I'm not in that mentality, but there's certain things that I'm not going to choose that as a battle.
Yeah.
It's just not worth my energy. In fact, nowadays I am more presently aware of what enters and holds space in my mind.
Mm.
Like I talked to my wife about stuff. We have a very peaceful home. Like I love it. I don't have to worry about stuff, but every once in a while something comes in.
Mm.
And I'll notice it because my body goes, something's off. And I go, of all the things in life we could be talking about, why are we talking about this thing?
Wow.
Okay, it's become this kind of center of the household thing of like, we don't need to express or even spend mental energy on this thing. And not that it's not important. It might be one or two of us, but like, could we be talking about a trip we're going to take? Could we be talking about something that was great? What was a good part of our days? We don't, the gossip stuff, like, no, I don't care about any, none of it's helping us, right? So I'll be presently aware of like what enters the mind. Like I have kids on my team, my football team, and I find we've been talking about a couple people recently, and I go, what bothers me is that we could have been talking about anything, the scheming, the plays we're going to do, the good players doing well. We're talking about this kid who's not.
Mm.
And I don't think it's healthy for our team for us to have mental energy expelled in this place.
Wow.
So it's kind of the same thing. It's like 300 years from now, none of this matters, right? So if it doesn't, spend time on what does.
Mm. Well said. Anthony, I want to play a little game. This game I call the five bests. Best book you ever read.
Ooh, best book I ever read. Golly. There's a lot, and that's the sucky part. It's going to be rapid fire, doesn't it? First one that came to mind was As a Man Thinketh.
Okay.
I don't know. It's a short, simple one.
Yeah.
That popped into my head first.
Classic.
It does a lot for unpacking and who you are and how you think. Maybe it's tied to identity in some ways, too.
Mm.
But that came to my head. It's a short read, though. It's like 60 pages.
Mm,
but that one for me has a good impact on my life.
Best investment you ever made?
I would say the investment of quiet time in January. That I told you about that January.
Mm.
So I cut off all women. I didn't go anywhere. And I would sit in a room on a brown couch staring at a brown wall.
Mm.
And I would invest time into asking myself questions. Why'd your marriage fall apart? What was your role in that? Why is your business not doing well? Why are you in the shape you want to be in? Why aren't you a very good parent?
Mm.
So it was an investment of time in really uncomfortable questions.
Mm. Best time in your life?
The holidays. My best time is Christmas is when we all, as a family, they're all in the house and we're sitting on one couch watching a movie. If I can be in physical contact, like my kids were smaller, I could just be like this and be like, mom, and then little one and little one, I could like be here with all of them. Like that was... That's the absolute best, man. That's the best memories I have.
Memories.
We got this big couch from Ashley Furniture. It was just this big recliner. Like a queen size bed size.
Yeah.
That was just the best.
Shout out to Ashley's Furniture. Best advice you ever got?
It takes a little more to be a champion.
Ooh, takes a little more.
Don Pelham, my college coach.
It always sits a good one.
Because you always think you're doing something,
that's
right?
A good one.
You get to that level and you go, hey, you felt good? Okay, it takes a little more.
It's a good one.
It's when you don't want to give it. But yeah, that one always sets with me.
I love like bodybuilding and all those guys and lifting. And they would always say, you always got three more reps. You always got three more reps in you.
Yeah. Always. If you want to pull it out.
More.
Goggin lives on, right? Goggin is like, you got 100 in you, go now. But no, reality is, it takes a little bit more.
Mm.
And it's it's more than who you are today.
Mm.
I'm a champion.
Mm.
Most people don't do it.
What's the best practice for shifting identity?
So we have this thing we do every day. We call it dark work, work in the dark to win the light, right? And it's a daily thing. And there's a couple pieces of it, but the one that I call is an identity action. So every day you do something that is in the direction of an out of character, but positive character you want to become. So for example, if your neighbor across the street is Bob, and every day you walk by, Bob cusses you out.
Mm-hmm.
One day Bob's going to say, hey, how are you doing? Oh, it's weird. What's Bob trying to do, right? And then the next day does it. Next day does it. Eventually, Bob all of a sudden, super out of character, but in a great direction. Mm-hmm. You stop and go, Bob, why are you so nice now? You go, you know what? One day I realized I want to have a good life. So I figured I stopped being rude to my neighbor. So I'm being nice to you. Like, I don't care why he did it, but it was out of character in a better direction. All of us had to find what that out of character thing is. And here's what it typically starts with is you ask someone in your life, hey, this is a guy, Tim Murphy, I think his name is. And he says, it's hard to see the label when you're inside the jar.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I ask people, hey, what's the label on my jar that I need to work on? And when I know what that is, I then do that.
Wow.
I got to be more apologetic, more patient, less angry. Do I need to be more gracious with my son? So every day you're going to find an action, if you can, that either you've been procrastinating on. And the reason we procrastinate is because we fear it. If we didn't fear it, it'd already be done.
Mm.
Right? So what's that thing you've been procrastinating on? What's the action that's going to elevate you that scares you in an exciting way? But every day do one small thing because I'm not a big fan of going big.
Same.
I love to go small in a very big way.
Mm.
I want to find a little small thing and I'm gonna hammer it.
Yeah.
Get big on that. But that thing becomes part of me now.
Mm.
And the more I do it, it's hard in the beginning to do.
Yeah.
And it becomes hard not to do because it's part of your identity now.
Yeah.
But you had to stick it in little by little and it's tough and it's hard. Eventually I go, I can't go to bed without doing this. Mm. You're the guy that does that thing, right? I am the guy that does that thing every day, right? And that's how you become somebody new.
Mm. Chip away. If I gave you a magic wand, and you could wave that magic wand at the earth, and tomorrow when you woke up, your magic wand wish was granted, what would your magic wand wish be?
We go back to tribes.
Okay, all right. I haven't heard expound on that. We go back to tribes.
I love humanity in these conversations. I love doing this. And I think back to when the back of the day was, right? Nowadays, we have a house. House has lights and power. And so what I do is I go out into the world and I come home. And I don't even spend time with my friends all the time, right? But I come home and it's me in my hut by myself. I don't engage with society. I don't even know my neighbor sometimes. And I go, back in the day, it must have been cool. You wake up with your buddies, spend the whole day fishing and walking and talking and hanging. You just, the humans, the reason we're here in the first place. And then when you come back, it's like there isn't power in your hut. You know, you're not going to put a fire in the teepee usually, right? It's not big enough. So what we do is we all cook together. We talk together. We hang around the fire. We dance. We engage with the entire community until the lights go out. Mm. And we go get our 8 hours of sleep that we need, right? We get up and do it again. And you get immersed in that.
Mm.
Now, it's easy to talk to that, you know, when we're so far progressed, you know, we'll call it intelligence-wise and everything and, you know, technologically, right? But for me, all the technology, all the things we have, like they're cool because they give your brain that little dopamine dump, but it's artificial.
Mm.
Like it's not really what I want. I want to have a great laugh with my son. That's why I send the meme to him. Or my wife, I want to sit with the kids. Or I want to be with my friends and go travel. I want to come hang out with people like you. That's the stuff I enjoy.
Mm.
And I go, what if I had like an overload of that?
Mm.
That would be fun for me. Now it may take away the cars and all the extra experiences and all that, you know, but I don't know, man. I don't hear a lot of stories about people that go, I hated life because I didn't have a cell phone. You know, like it's usually people are like, I just saw some girl the other day. Like, she's like, it was so great to be off social media for 2 weeks. And I'm like, if you're saying that, there's something there. Like, not to say that it's bad. Everything's a vehicle. It's dual use. It could be amazing. It also be bad. But I think, man, if I can wave a magic wand, I'd like to, I don't want to take us back in time, but like, I'd love to at least have that structure of like, we go hang out with our friends and do work together. And then we all come home, we like cook meals together and then just, you know, disperse off to our houses and do that again. That I would love.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I think you basically are echoing all, what all the research, all the Harvard longevity studies are saying, that the most important thing in a person's life is the people.
Yeah.
I mean, this determines the quality of life more than anything else. It's the relationships, it's the people, it's the love. Yeah, community is key. I like that. I like, you know, I studied anthropology. I studied all tribes and I think that girl who's saying I took 2 weeks off from social media, it's just getting back to being human. Like we've kind of technologically advanced our way out of humanity.
It's crazy. Yeah. And everything we want.
To our detriment.
Yeah. We're like, we're yearning for the thing that's always readily there. Mm. We're keeping it at bay because of the thing we keep presently close to us, whether it's the phone or the TV. Or, it's weird though, but at the same time, I know that my world, I want to help people, our world, so like, you do it where they're at.
Yeah.
It's just this, it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Well, you got to hold the energy and you do that well. Mr. Anthony Trucks, thank you for coming on Sauna Sessions.
I appreciate it.
Where can people learn more about you, find out about you, follow you?
Go to at Anthony Trucks on Instagram, man. That's where I live.
Okay.
I'm the one that communicates and messages and everything. I still like to be a human that interacts with humans on there.
That's it. Bringing back that tribal community, man. That's it. Anthony, thank you for coming on Sauna Sessions.
Pleasure, man. Thank you for having me.
My guy. My guy.